Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very, very special guest. Her name is Stephanie Chinqua, and she is a social worker and the founder of the Resiliency Center of Newtown, Connecticut. And the work that she's doing is so special. I didn't think I'd be crying so early in the show, but here we go. This is just what happens. And so let me just bring her to the stage, and then I will we will start our conversation. Welcome, Stephanie.
Hello, and thank you for having me, Hillary.
You're welcome. So Stephanie was a call that I made for something else for my other job. And when she told me what she was doing, I said, oh my God, we have to have you on the show. So I'm so, I don't know if I'm happy that she's telling the story, but I'm thrilled that we'll be able to educate people. And especially after yesterday's shooting, try to prevent these things from happening. So Stephanie, do you want to talk about, you know, your background and how you got into social work or where you were working before the tragic day in Sandy Hook?
Absolutely. So as Hillary said, I am a social worker by training and background. I got into that field right from school. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I think at a young age, after a scary experience myself, I was at Sloan Kettering at 4 years old, saw some traumatic stuff there. My roommate had passed away. I was fortunate enough to be lucky and survive and be misdiagnosed, but obviously that is trauma. And seeing how kids were struggling, families were struggling, even though I was only a young child, I think it just always was in my internal being to go out and help others. So I went to school for social work, was unsure.
Can you you were at Sloan Kettering 4 years old. They thought you had something that you didn't.
Right. They had told my parents I had a rare form of cancer and I would likely pass away within 6 months. So obviously that's nothing any parent ever wants to hear. Fortunately, like I said, I was extremely lucky and misdiagnosed.
How did they know they had misdiagnosed? How did they figure
Once
that out?
Once they did surgery and saw the mass, they were able to tell my parents it was not what they had anticipated.
Oh my God. So your parents must have like aged. Right. How long did they think you had that diagnosis for?
It was pretty quick. Everything happened very quickly. I had a mass show up and then went right to the pediatrician. And then at that point told my mom, you have 24 hours to decide. We were living in New Jersey at that time. Do you go to Sloan Kettering or the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia? And after speaking to my father and them talking to people, ultimately decided that Sloan Kettering would be the best place for me.
So even if it was a week, it's still like,
yes,
trauma.
Absolutely.
And you had the trauma. Okay, so keep going. Sorry.
So after, like I said, after a couple of weeks left there, healthy, very blessed, and was like, what are you going to do with life? And went back and forth between law and social work. Ended up social work. My first calling was right out of grad school, working with legal aid. My internship was with legal aid and forensic social work, kind of combining my passion for maybe law and social work. And after I left the city, went back to the public defender's office and worked there. And I was actually in the courthouse the day of the shooting. At this point, my family and I lived in Sandy Hook. I had a first grade son and a preschool daughter. And one of the marshals came up to me and said, "You need to go. There's a shooting in your town." And after I left the city, went back to the public defender's office and worked there. And I was actually in the courthouse the day of the shooting. At this point, my family and I lived in Sandy Hook. I had a first grade son and a preschool daughter. And one of the marshals came up to me and said, "You need to go. There's a shooting in your town." And after I left the city, went back to the public defender's office. The kids were in school and everyone was in the parking lots. And you couldn't get your kids, obviously. Everyone was kind of in the lockdown. They were at the Catholic school in the town. And so a couple hours later, we're able to fortunately get my children. Not everyone was so lucky that day. And realized that it was Sandy Hook Elementary School where the shooting was. Still not a lot of information. Helicopters were swarming. Thought maybe there was a second shooter. And that night, I remember that weekend, like it was yesterday, what I was wearing. Whenever we have a traumatic event, we always remember where we were, what we were wearing, what we ate. And just sat and waited. And you would text, so-and-so's daughter passed away. So-and-so's teacher passed away. The principal passed away. And this went on all night, thinking like, what am I going to tell my son? And the next day, same thing, went to Mass, 4 o'clock Mass that Saturday. They were doing a big community Mass, so it was packed. And at that point, the list was coming out of everyone who was deceased. And it's paralyzing. You can't imagine. You feel for those families saying, like, my son was in that school that age. Two girls he went to preschool with were in the school and did pass away. So families we knew, and you're numb for sure. Community was numb, but really came together, rallied, small New England community. And probably after a week, I went back to the courts and I was really struggling with like, what am I going to do next? Like I'm not okay with this. I'm feeling very unsettled. I need to respond. I need to do something. My friends who were in that school were struggling, not knowing where to go. So I said, we need to have a place where people can gather and also get mental health support and treatments to help. Because what we do know is you get traumatized alone and you heal together. Relationships and connections are what heal people. So I reached out to a 9/11 organization, Tuesday's Children at the time, and said, you guys are still around, kind of, what's your model? What do you do? This is what I'm thinking. And they were very supportive in getting me up and running. You have a very different model. What you know is you get traumatized alone and you heal together. Relationships and connections are what heal people. So I reached out to a 9/11 organization, Tuesday's Children at the time, and said, you guys are still around, kind of, what's your model? What do you do? This is what I'm thinking. And they were very supportive in getting me up and running. You have a very different model. What you know is you get traumatized alone and you heal together. Relationships and connections are what the tragedy, almost 12 years, I have learned a lot about trauma, PTSD, and grief that they don't teach us in school, even as someone who went to school for social work.
Right.
So that September, I opened the center and said, we're going to do this. I don't know what's going to happen. I left my state job. I said, I need to do this and hopefully it works out. I went to the first select woman at the time and she was like, are you sure you want to do this? We have a lot of great organizations already in town. And I said, yes, we're going to be non-duplicative with a mission really to help people impacted by the shooting, a singular event mission, and got aboard and said, you know, our plan will be to sunset eventually, not because otherwise you'll have to change the mission. So open the center, and it was really helpful to the community. And we were very fortunate that we were able to get grants, have galas through the years, partner with some wonderful organizations. Did a summer camp for 2 years with an organization that did one for the 9/11 survivors.
Wow.
Where we partnered the 9/11 survivors with Sandy Hook kids and went to sleepaway camp. And kids still talk about it. My kids still talk about it when they're with their friends. You'll hear them talking about camp. You know, and the whole idea was innocence was lost that day. We're talking about babies, 6, 7, 8, 9 year olds who were about to, you know, have Christmas concerts, go, you know, Hanukkah was going to start, whatever the celebration was coming up, coloring. And now their life is forever changed. And, you know, 20 classmates are dead and murdered, and principals and teachers and support staff that cared for them. So that was really important for me. And also parents, right? How do we as parents do the best we can and take care of ourselves, the oxygen mask theory, while needing to care for our kids, not knowing what to expect? They're struggling with what had happened and now becoming a helicopter parent and giving space for the kids to still be kids is extremely difficult.
Now, can I ask you a question? Were you the first person to open a resiliency center, or was this something that was already being done after other tragedies?
Well, there weren't many other tragedies. So Columbine has some nonprofits. I don't believe they had a center. Something's happened that was very long ago. Aurora had some kind of center. And then when I opened the Resiliency Center, again, it was young kids. The model kind of had shifted. Back then, you also got a lot of donations. Now, when there's school shootings, you don't get that kind of support pouring into your community. Unfortunately, I think people are desensitized to that and don't really understand how much support some people do need.
But did you, I guess what I'm trying to get at is,
wasn't a model.
So you created, this is your model. You created this.
Yes. And my model really was a gathering place. And I'll send you some pictures of the center. It was a really big open center with couches and tables. So people could come in and just be together.
Wow.
We had somebody who lost a child and would come in and hook up to the Wi-Fi and would say, I'm fine. I'm not in crisis. I just needed to get out of my house and not feel so isolated and just want to sit here and work. And we always had pretzels, tea, coffee for people.
And I'm just blown away that you, this was just something that you did, you know, you knew, and maybe it was just your path, you know, maybe it just came and maybe other people help you, but that you took the initiative, you left your job and you did this and created this center for people. I mean, that just blows me away. So it's not nothing, you know what I mean? It's really an amazing thing. So I just want you to get that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I always am so grateful. You know, I, of course, I had a ton of support doing it, and I was very supportive people in my life to say, okay, if this is what you want to do, we'll do it. And got an amazing board also behind me, community people. It certainly was scary.
Yeah. Did you have to build the whole building or did you take over?
No. It was a building in Newtown. Somebody who knew some of us said, I know you're looking for space. I'm in a building where there's some vacant space. Why don't you come look at it and see if we could work something out? Because I really wanted to make sure it wasn't in the limelight. So if people were coming for services, they were protected. And also there are a lot of people out there who were saying a lot of negative things in media and didn't want people to easily find us to keep our space very sacred and a safe. Right. We wanted to hold a safe space for people where they wouldn't be, feeling uncomfortable if their neighbor saw them walking into the center.
Right. Okay. Wow. I mean, it's just, you know, all the like community and, you know, relationships and, you know, like one of my missions is to elevate the conversation and consciousness of the planet so that we all get, we are one together and, you know, that nobody's left out, sort of like what you're doing. And this is just what, you know, is there for me. So I thank you for doing this, you know, for just having the vision or something like this. So,
well, thank you. And again,
yeah,
I have great people supporting me and working there to do great things. I was very fortunate also to have a phenomenal therapeutic staff of art therapists, music therapists, play therapists, MNRI and brain spotting. And, you know, usually turnover in this kind of field is very high. Obviously burnout is a real thing. Self-compassion fatigue. And teams stayed together for a really long time.
And were they paid or were they volunteers?
Yep. They were all paid. So Now what happens when they're easily shooting like something like Sandy Hook, there's a grant, federal grant that will come in to help support services for a period of time. And then when that goes away, you got to start applying for other grants. So I spent time writing grants and again, doing galas and fundraisers in the community.
Wow. And is the center still there?
So the brick and mortar closed in June. So I always plan to sunset after the 10 years. Go off. You hope the kids go to gainful employment, go off to college. They move, are looking to virtually connect them. So do a virtual center. Because what we're finding is just because you leave or it's 10, 11, 12 years later, doesn't mean it's gone or forgotten. And every time there's another event, school shooting, shooting in general, obviously that's really hard for people. It brings back a lot of memories. We never want anyone to feel isolated and alone.
Right.
No one should ever worry alone.
Do you think that they, let's say yesterday, there's another shooting, one of those kids or a parent and I, like, do I know to reach out? Do I know to find you guys? Like, how does that?
So there's a lot of organizations and that will people are known about nationally.
Okay.
So whether that be like a Sandy Hook Promise or any of those other organizations that are very nationally known, doing much, much different work than what I did at the center. They get calls and sometimes they'll call me and say, I got a call from X, Y, and Z at this shooting. Can I pass them on to you about how they should run their center? What were lessons learned? What can you share with them? And every community is different.
Right.
So it's really just a framework and then you need to figure it out. You know, Newtown is a small community. So we were able to have a successful brick and mortar. All the kids were together. All the staff were somewhat local. You have something like a Vegas shooting or possibly yesterday in Kansas City that with the Chiefs, those people could be from all over the country.
Right.
And so how do we still connect them? Because again, what's going to, that peer support, talking to somebody who's been through what you're going through and giving people hope. Life may not look the same, and it will look different, and it will be a new normal, but still having hope when you're feeling so incredibly hopeless.
I mean, what do you say to someone?
And it's hard, you know, people will say, especially in a, like I said, a small town with one really local grocery store.
Yeah.
People would see me and, you know, my child was murdered and they were friends and now they're avoiding me at the grocery store and going down the other aisle. And I think in general, when things are tough as humans, our mechanism is to avoid because it's uncomfortable for us.
Right.
and we don't know what to say or how that person's going to respond, or we're really struggling, so we avoid. And a lot of times we really just want people to say, I'm here for you, or if you need anything, I see you.
So you need, I mean, not that you need to, but you know, working with the people who may be not affected and how to support the ones who were, right? I mean, that's also something we don't know.
And you have survivor's guilt. That's a very real thing. Oof.
Wow. You
know, I don't want to come in for services because somebody needs it more.
Right.
Or if I take a spot, if somebody else calls and is worse than me, please give it to them.
Right. Or I shouldn't feel bad because someone had it worse.
And over time, several even different populations, once they see you in the community, you get a trust in the community. Eventually, they may say, like, so what happened in those offices and those back rooms? Or maybe I need to see one of the therapists. Because, again, they start to get trust. And you could just come to the center. You know, when there was another shooting, whether it was Parkland or Uvalde, we would just send out a message saying, we are going to be open after hours tonight. Just come. And people would just come and sit on the couch and just want to talk to each other and talk about how they feel about it and what's going on. And again, normalizing their response.
Wow. Well, that sounds like, you know, normalizing. I like that word. Normalizing your response. It sounds
then
like,
again, always supported by therapists throughout on the staff. It's great.
Yeah.
You know, we did a book club, and you know, there was always therapists there. Again, an amazing team doing amazing work, hard work for them when they were saying, you know what, I need a little more support right now. And also, we're really careful to take, and I say this to all the communities now, you know, obviously everyone has a workforce issue, but even when you get people, to make sure that you're taking care of your staff best you can. You know, I look back, certainly lessons learned myself and how it impacted me, but you know, we learned from that. I did have a staff development once a quarter uh-huh. from a gentleman who came up from the Virginia area, who was a professor and music therapist. And we would go offsite and have a day retreat of just being able to talk about our concerns and take care of our own needs to continue serving the community.
Wow. Have you gotten feedback from the community that what you did was, you know, helpful and helped them?
Yes. You know, the people who use, you know, not everyone's going to use the center.
Right.
That's okay. And not everyone who goes through a school shooting or any traumatic mass event like that is going to suffer from PTSD. I always tell people when I talk, it's about what we're predisposed. Some of it is genes. Some of it is how well our carry-on is packed prior to the event.
Right.
How we're going to respond to the event. But families were incredibly, incredibly grateful for the services and what we supported the community, whether it be the mental health aspect of it or the summer camp or the book club, and really just being understanding of what they needed. You know, I'm a big believer of we give people the tools and we empower them, but you and I are very different. What's going to work for me may not work for Hillary.
Right.
And so let's be equipped with all the tools and resources to educate you and guide you to hopefully make the best decision that's going to work for you.
Wow. Ooh. All right. So that's, you know, just thank you again for what you've done for that community. You know, I am in Connecticut. I'm in Westport, not, you know, but it's close enough. So just thank you on behalf of all of us. I know you said earlier that you know, I had thought ignorantly enough that it was a gun control problem, and you said, no, that's not where we're focused, and that's not necessarily the problem, which I thought was like, wow. I know you've learned lessons, and you want to prevent the next, you know, prevent something like this happening again. Can you tell the people what you told me before?
Yes, and, you know, I don't really get on the political side of gun control. That's a complicated one. And obviously we need some change in some laws and access. But I really do believe we also have to make sure we are raising good humans and we're supporting people who struggle with mental health. And not only do we have available resources, but we have accessible resources to our people who are struggling. That is not the case right now. We have a nationwide mental health crisis. Our kids are struggling more than they ever had, starting at a much younger age. So really, what are we doing and what can we be doing more at all levels to support our children? You know, firearms are the leading cause of death right now for children under 19.
Right. And that was something that I was not, you know, ignorantly assume that's what it was. Can you talk about why there's a mental health crisis? Why you think that is now the case when it wasn't when we were young? Your opinion?
I think there's a lot of, it goes into a lot of areas, and certainly I'm not an expert in that, but I think some of it may be from our different generations is we didn't have the accessibility to social media and phones to know some of what was going on. So how much more has it increased? You know, we have all news from around the world at our fingertips now, because everyone's on devices and you can get anything you want, real, fake, indifferent. It's there and you can find it. You know, we went through COVID. People were isolated. We do know, no matter what, being isolated and alone for anybody is very, very difficult. And now since COVID, we have some places that haven't gone back to working, interacting with people. We're more on devices and Zoom and virtual worlds, which can work well for some people. But again, for people who isolate and are struggling, we don't always have an eye on them. So that's hard. You know, a lot of our children who were home, who are suffering, school's a safe space. It's where they get their free meals because they don't get food at home. It's where they have structure. It's where they're loved. Not everybody goes home to loving homes. And so when we took school away from people and children, especially in some other communities where kids suffer, that became really hard.
Okay, so that's all right. So then, and then you were talking about, well, you had said two things, and we can cover some of them after the commercial break, but the preventative for the mental health support, do you want to wait on that and come back to it, or do you want to?
Sure, we can take the break and then we can come back and talk about prevention and response.
Okay, all right, so let's do that now. We're going to go to a brief message from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back. Thank you.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
So welcome back to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KokoriApp.com. It ties in right with the message of what we're talking today. They bring experiential social-emotional learning to classrooms, to teams, to businesses, and to really foster connection and socialization, especially after COVID, when, as Stephanie was saying, our children were isolated. So it helps them in a fun way connect again and bring, you know, bring back or relearn their social skills. And then as always, with my books, I don't have it within reach, but my book, Real Talk, it's all about speaking and learning to say what you're afraid to say so that you can create some freedom for yourself. I know I kind of had to learn the hard way when I was stuck. And I wrote the book so that I could help others who are uncomfortable saying things. And we practice and we do create freedom for you and a life that you love. And now I want to bring back Stephanie. Wait. I had the pronunciation. Chinqua. Here she comes. Thank you, Stephanie. So, okay. So we were talking. I know you've learned a lot and I just really, you know, appreciate your message. It wasn't at a conscious level that isolation was so damaging. So thank you for just saying it out loud so that people can be aware. And I think you're right with the phones and stuff. It's just normal now. And maybe it wasn't, you know, 20 years ago. So you said, you know, you're creating preventative measures for people who might be in trouble. I know you had told me, right. You talk. I have things I could say, but I guess.
Well, obviously, when I opened the center, I was hoping I was going to open the center and close and go back to my job in the court system and the prisons, having no idea that we would have the number of mass shootings that we've had since Sandy Hook Elementary School. Like I said, where people have really become desensitized. They don't get a lot of news and press anymore. And yet, living and seeing every day the impact it can have on people's lives, which is tremendous. No one wants to be reacting. We don't want there to be a shooting and then we have to respond and open the center. And what does that look like? That's what we're doing because that's what we need to do to make sure people who are impacted nationwide get their support that they have. But I really would love to be able to focus more on prevention. What are we doing for our young children? What life skills are we teaching them in and out of the classroom to help them be able to process and not feel hopeless? You know, over 90% of school shooters made some kind of threat online beforehand and people knew about it, usually their peers. So educating peers also to say, if you see something, say something.
Like what kind of a threat would someone recognize?
So they make a threat on TikTok or Snapchat or Instagram.
Like I'm going to kill you or I'm going to...
I'm going to kill you. I'm going to shoot up a school. Report it because it can be real. And we need to recognize that. We don't want kids to live through a school shooting like in Sandy Hook or Uvalde, or we can go on, Tennessee, I mean, endless, before they take it seriously. Because we don't know. And let people know, you know, teach kids and make sure children have a trusted adult. We knew one predictor of success is for children to have a trusted adult in their life. And that can be anybody. I tell people all the time, you don't need to have a mental health background to be kind and empathetic and listen to a child. Let them know they're seen. Let a child who had a bad day at school and may have gotten suspended return to school knowing each day is a fresh start. We're here. I see you. We'll support you. We don't want anyone to feel hopeless. And we also don't want anyone to be bullied.
So how do you get, you know, now you're online. I mean, how do you get this message out? I mean, it's so basic, but yet.
It's so basic, but so complicated, right?
Well, once someone tells you, you know, if your kid's upset, you might be busy, but what's, you know, when you're a parent and you got all this stuff going on, it's like, yeah. It's so easy to get distracted. But what is the most important thing? If your child is upset, stop yourself and say, what's the most important thing in my life? My child. Listen. But it takes something. You know, it takes something to get yourself out of your busy automatic way, I think. So how do we teach
right.
that?
Right. And I think we also have to be mindful. We're in a society now. Inflation's a real thing. You have parents working 1, 2, 3 jobs, maybe after school hours, just trying to make sure the kids have a place to live and food. So that is a real thing, right? It's not an easy place we're living in right now, financially for parents and supporting kids and a lot, you know, generational trauma. How do we break generational trauma? Of getting our kids to understand too, again, let's be kind to each other. What does it mean when you bully somebody? You know, more bully prevention programs, more getting kids to, again, support each other. Helping teachers. Teachers is an extremely hard job, especially in today's world. And they went to school. They have very little background in mental health, trauma-informed supports, what it looks like. So when you have a kid who comes in who's very dysregulated, and you're a teacher trying to teach math, and you're just telling Johnny to sit down and sit down and sit down, or Johnny's throwing the desk, or Johnny's hitting you. You know, we also have to support our staff as well.
Right. So what do they do?
The skills and knowledge to understand the brain and how the brain works. And it's from, you know, trauma. What every kid coming to your classroom is going to learn differently because they're coming from a different set of circumstances. And allowing our teaching staff grace to figure out, like, where is Johnny coming from? Did Johnny not eat this morning? Did Johnny's dad get arrested last night? Did Johnny's mom not come home last night? And we put so much pressure on our teaching staff for academics when we know if we get kids what they need emotionally first and regulated, their academics are going to increase. But we have to take the time to build that relationship and rapport with our students and let them be empathetic and let them to understand that these things are real. And how do we, it's okay to report if you see something. Don't let something go because you think it's not serious or somebody else is going to do it or I don't want to be considered a snitch. You know, reporting is helping people. And really trying to change the mindset of how kids think about those things.
And how, I mean, what you're saying is so important and so brilliant and so helpful. And how, you know, obviously we have this interview, but how do you get that message out to kids? Or how do we help teachers you know, who are so overwhelmed with the system or whatever they got to be empathetic or to find out if Johnny's hungry or whatever, you know, again, the preventative before this happens. How it's almost like we have to feed something into the system. And how do we do that? Do you know?
And I don't know. We're trying to figure it out. Continuing to advocate for, like I said, trauma-informed support in schools, staff PD, speaking to kids about bullying, speaking to kids about kindness, empathy. But again, it's easier to wait for the event and then to respond than to change what we've been doing for years and be preventive.
Right.
So but we're really trying to shift as much as we can slowly on, let's look at the overall brain health and wellness of our students. Because there is a lot of science out there about if we regulate our children and they have a trusted adult, they're going to produce better. There's going to be less violent behaviors and aggressive behaviors in schools. We also have a lot of data that aggression is up in our schools tremendously, starting at a much, much younger age. So if we're talking elementary kids now, what happens when puberty hits and life happens in middle school and high school? So how do we support those students? And again, those staff who also need supports because they just weren't ever taught. You know, I've learned a lot of schools tremendously, starting at a much, much younger age. So if we're talking elementary kids now, what happens when puberty hits and life happens in middle school and high school? So how do we support those students? And again, those staff who also need supports because they just weren't ever taught. You know, I've learned a lot of schools tremendously, starting at a much, much younger age.
Redoing the whole system of schools, of teachers, of their training, of what kids get taught, and how do we do that? You know, who is the right, you know, who's the right ear? Who can get that going? I mean, obviously, you know, your knowledge is so valuable, unfortunately, because of what you went through, but yeah. What do you
say? Why is it the brain's the least studied organ? Let's start teaching people about the brain and how it's impacted by trauma and by how it's impacted and learn from that and figure out how we can teach better and have more supports. Again, it goes back to mental health supports. They're very hard to get. They're not affordable. They're not accessible. There's wait list. They don't have staff to help. And what do we do?
Right. And I mean, I don't know if you see that there would also be shame or that people wouldn't reach out because they think there's something wrong with them and they don't want anyone to know and they don't know, like they're isolated. They don't know, what did you call it? The normalization or something like that, that other people feel the same way, you know?
And definitely different cultures, there's more stigma than others. You don't ask for help. You don't seek the therapist. Stigma is a real thing in the world of mental health. It still is. People are trying to shift that. Again, you go to the doctor if you have a broken arm. It should be more normalized and acceptable. I think the needle has shifted a little bit, but it's still stigmatized.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, we got our work cut out for us. And I, you know, I'll keep thinking, I know people, you know, who are in education, who are, you know, we working with transformation to bring other things in. And I can, you know, definitely introduce you to some people that, you know, maybe you can collaborate with because it's so important, especially for society. Right. All right. So where were we? One of the things you said was you were going to let people know that there are resources. Where would you say if somebody is struggling, where they could reach out right now? and to let them know that it's okay to reach out, that there's not going to be a stigma.
Right. Well, again, we never want anyone to worry alone. And so trying to find support that works for you is extremely important. You know, if someone is in crisis, homicidal, suicidal, SAMHSA has a text 988 now, and you can simply text 24/7. There's a variety of 24/7 hotlines that adults and can call and reach out to and ask for supports, again, not to feel alone. And so I really encourage people, if they are feeling that they're struggling, or if they're even just feeling a little depressed or anxious, that try to find somebody you connect with. You know, I always say, if you go to a therapist, give them 3 chances and see if you have a connection with them. Because doing the work is hard. And a lot of times, as I mentioned earlier, we come into the room with prior events in our life that have shaped us and molded us. So if it's the shooting that got me in the door, that's fine. But we end up working on a whole array of events that, no one gets a pass on that.
Right.
We all have life. Everyone's looks differently. Some face more adversity than others. Resilience is something that can be nurtured and grown. So let's help those people nurture and grow. Post-traumatic growth is a real thing. People who go through horrific events, and we saw that in Sandy Hook, and we're not alone, of many wonderful, wonderful organizations and nonprofits that were formed by family members who lost a loved one that day, doing great things in response.
Now, you had said, give a therapist 3 times. How would someone know? I mean, I can kind of guess, but what would you say that someone would know after 3 times whether this is the right person for them?
Only you can decide if you connect with somebody and if you feel that person's genuine and authentic.
So, but I would say if you feel like they heard you,
correct,
that they were empathetic and they weren't. I mean, I had a therapist once and she was like yelling at me, don't say this and don't say this. And I was just like, whoa. I mean, I think I gave her the 3 strikes and I said, I'm not coming back, because it didn't feel safe. And I felt like I had been scolded, and I was like, that's not why I'm here, you know.
Sometimes that may only take 1 visit, right? Like,
yeah.
I was safe there. I was uncomfortable. You didn't hold space for me. You want someone who's going to hold space for you to authentically be you and to
right.
be heard and to be seen.
See, I didn't know that, because as a people pleasing person who always blamed myself, I thought, oh, I just have to be more careful, because that's one of the things I came in with. But the 3rd time I was like, no, this is not me, you know, which took a lot for me to say, hey, this isn't me, I'm out. So, you know, people should be aware of that if there's someone like me who could blame themselves or think they gotta be good. You know, you don't have to be good for your therapist. They're there to help you. You're not there to behave right, you know, in a certain, you don't have to, what's the word, please them, or
right.
Like, you should be able to be yourself, I guess. Is the
absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to really do the work.
Yeah. Because otherwise you're not.
Be true to yourself.
Else. Yeah. That's it. Thank you. Be true to yourself. Yeah. Because I don't think we're taught to be that, you know. Mm-mm. So how do you know? But anyway, I'm taking this down rabbit hole. Okay, good. All right. And so where were you going? I'm sorry. I think just that they would be free to reach out, you know, without the stigma and without worrying. Yeah.
And I also encourage people too, if you see people in the community or out where you are and something seems off, you know, sometimes just simply saying to somebody you don't know, are you okay? Or do you need help? You don't have to be the person to help them, but you might be the person who can say, you know what, I can call crisis for you or police for you, or, you know, people feel so incredibly alone. And really, again, you don't have to be a therapist to build a relationship with somebody.
Right. And when you were talking about, like, if someone sees someone bullying or the threats, let's say they saw something on social media where someone was threatening, who would they tell?
When we go into schools, you always say, do you have a trusted adult? And if you don't, think about who that trusted adult would be as your first line of defense. If you don't, you know, if it's obviously a threat, tell authorities to make sure it's acted on, or if it's after hours. But the key is making sure all of our children have a trusted adult, whether that's someone who works in the cafeteria, or their math teacher, their wrestling coach, their, you know, if they're in a youth group, the janitor, the bus driver, whoever it is, that they feel that they can confide in somebody when something happens, or if they see something, that they feel comfortable enough saying something.
Wow. Now, are you going around speaking to schools? Is that where you're?
So I speak to schools. I present at conferences and help communities when they reach out after they've been impacted by a shooting, trying to really start to focus on what does it look like in response? How can we respond better? Again, that's not where we want to be, but that's where we are. And so when events happen, we want to be able to be there and support them from, unfortunately, knowledge and expertise that we now have. And then again, trying to hopefully do some preventative side.
Yeah, so
how can we help our staff? How can we help our kids? How can we help people in the community?
So if people wanted to reach out, let's say they want to do preventative work, where would they find you so that you could come in and speak?
So you can still find me at Stephanie at Resiliency Center of Newtown.
Okay. And Stephanie is with a PH.
So. Yeah, and an IE, yes.
Right. Okay, Stephanie at Resiliency
Center of Newtown.org.
Okay. Of Newtown.org. Okay. And I think, you know, people should reach out to you and bring you in and have you teach them, because it's so valuable. So whatever we can do to support you in that, you can let me know.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so important. And let's say so a kid doesn't have a trusted adult. How could they find one? I mean, you're a little kid.
Right. And I think it's talking to those young ones about what does that look like? Mm. Who in your life is the person you go to? You know, when I go to schools and there's behavior problems, you know, I'll say, like, who do you really like on campus? Like, let's go find them.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're not going to listen to me. If you don't have a really, I mean, us as adults, right? If you don't have a relationship with somebody or really care for somebody, you don't want to talk to them. You're going to go to somebody you do. You're going to shut down, or you're going to act out like most kids do. Mm. Negative behavior is still a behavior.
Right.
It's the attention they want.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, it's so, yeah. Thank you so much, Stephanie. What would you say your like mission is for the next 5 years or 25 years? And what do you hope to accomplish?
So we're going to just stick with 5 years.
Okay.
My kids are going to school, but you know, every time there's an event, just like yesterday after the Super Bowl parade, I say, like, I can't give up now. You know, this is not easy work for sure. Every time there's another event, my heart skips a beat and I say, like, these people don't know what's coming. It's like the train is just leaving the station and we're still learning in Newtown as our kiddos get older and we have a youth and teen and what their future looks like. You know, it's a continuing learning process. So really hope to educate people, help when there's a community that's been impacted, help guide them and support them. It really needs to be organic and in the community. A lot of people helicopter in after any tragedy and then they leave. That's not helpful. And I really wish we got away from that model. So supporting local people to grow organically in the community to help better serve their community, because they are the experts in their community, not me or not anybody else. So just kind of guide and support them, and then work on prevention in schools. What are those trauma-informed practices? How can we help our young youth and teen get to where they need to be and not be in a mental health crisis and not have behaviors and suspension rates and absenteeism skyrocketing?
Wow. Well, thank you. I mean, whew. Obviously, I cry, so that's just what I do. But this is really, you know, I'm so inspired by what you're doing, what you've taken on, you know, what you've learned, that you're not giving up, and that you're providing this. And, you know, whatever, like I said, whatever we can do to get this message out, let us know, and I will make sure that everybody watches this that I know, because it's so important. So thank you. And is there anything you want to say in closing? Yeah.
No, I just want to thank you for having me again. The more it's about awareness, and the more we can build awareness around what's going on. You don't know what you don't know, and you don't want to be in a community where there's something happened and then you have to respond, or you have to be part of the club. Nobody wanted to be part of this club. I wish I wasn't sitting here as the expert on school shooting response now, because it takes a toll on everybody.
Yeah.
But with the rate of events, I cannot let go now. And I got to keep my foot on the gas and keep advocating for our youth and supporting people working with our youth.
Yeah.
And people in general.
Yeah. Oh, it's so important to...
I don't want anyone to worry alone. I don't want anyone to ever feel hopeless and isolated.
All right. Well, let's get to work.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.